Chapter 6. Obviously, I'm not saying I can take on a whole army by myself, I said as I noticed all the eyes were on me. But if the problem is mostly this one guy and maybe a handful of cronies closest to him, I think me and my friends can handle that, Your Grace. Bakoth gave a sudden hearty laugh as he looked at me. I'd say that would be boasting coming from most men, the mohawked man snorted. But I've seen Eddie in action. His leadership skills rival those of men who've spent their whole lives as soldiers.
Word of your booming weapon has reached the farthest corners of the gloom,
Chief Murdrak replied.
But Iggurg is also a formidable warrior. Are you sure you want to do this, Eddie Hill?
Yes, Your Grace. I nodded as I felt a firm resolve come over me. I know it seems weird for an outsider to care what happens here, but this affects everyone. If this Iggurg is going to keep Karardu from dealing with Ursinger, then I'll make sure he's not a problem anymore.
Well said, Eddie.
Nylame smiled at me.
If you can do this,
the silver-haired man said as he studied me,
then you would be an honored friend of the Karardu. And as you take care of this war, Lord, Lady Ekname and I can plan a response to the Mad Chief's betrayal.
The six of us sat with Chief Murdrak and talked as we finished our tea, and I was asked to recount my encounter with Ursinger in the Yenny Woods in greater detail. I told the old man about how Ibsit's bastard half-brother was able to transform his generals into monsters, and the bearded man listened with a troubled expression on his face. When it was time to go, Ekname offered to help the other chief to his feet. Chief Murdrak, I murmured as the group said their goodbyes to the silver-haired man, I actually have a strange question for you.
You are in luck, Eddie Hill.
The bearded man grinned.
I have devoted my life to finding answers for strange questions.
I have some friends who need cobaltite, I replied. I was told it's something the Karardu have access to.
Indeed.
The old man nodded.
But the supply comes from the mines in the eastern region of my territory. For some time, Iggurg has cut off my access to the mineral. But I think I can spare a small portion for you from our stores, in light of your generous offer to help.
Thank you, Your Grace. I bowed my head.
Interesting friends you have,
the bearded man commented.
If they would need cobaltite, it could be a very powerful alchemical binding agent.
I can't really say much about them, I said in an apologetic tone. They've entrusted me with their secrets, so I hope you don't mind if I don't betray their trust, Chief Murdrak.
I would not ask you to break a confidence, Eddie Hill.
The old man shook his head, and his long beard swayed with emotion.
You are clearly a man of honor.
Thanks again, Your Grace. I smiled.
Speaking of favors,
Ekname interjected as she turned to her fellow chief.
Some of my men were petrified by a basilisk on the journey here. I've heard rumors its venom can potentially reverse the curse, so I collected some of the beast's fangs and wondered if you would be able to assist me.
A rare instance in which a rumor turns out to be true.
Murdrak chuckled.
Give the fangs to my servant here, and I'll have an antidote for you soon. It will take several days to create.
Thank you.
Ekname bowed her head. Then, with the help of a cane, Murdrak saw us out of his temple and waved to us from the top of the steps. But as the Dolrath soldiers and the Tor's Bane guard prepared to move out, a servant in long robes approached me and handed me a small cloth sack.
His Grace said I was to give this to you and offer his best wishes for your journey.
The young Night Elf man intoned. Oh, thank you, I said as I took the sack. Would you tell Chief Murdrak I'll be back soon to help out? He'll know what it means.
Of course,
the young man replied with a bow. The column started to move then, and we left Kedaran to move back towards Torsbane. The march back felt longer somehow, and eventually we stopped to make camp not far from the Evergreen Forest. My friends and I posted up around a fire before we took turns on the watch, and Bakoth made some more of his soldiers' stew. While we waited for the stew to be ready, the four of us played the Dolrath's dice game and joked among ourselves.
It would be more fun to play for coin.
Amrila pouted. Not after last time, I snorted. I thought you were going to take Bakoth's head off.
They're Bakoth's dice,
my wife said in an airy tone.
How do I know that they aren't loaded?
You don't need loaded dice when you're naturally lucky, the general grinned. Besides, I have two wives. Don't think your winsome little pout will work on me. Do you all think we should bring Skrello in on our little plan? I asked as Amrila rolled a 7. He could be pretty useful. I made sure to keep my voice down and to keep things vague. Vemin was sulking around the camp somewhere, and I didn't want him to overhear. The thief is very resourceful, the Mohawk general replied as he rolled a 3. He's all right for his Inkari. Bakoth shot a broad grin at Amrila, and she playfully threw a pebble at him.
I agree,
the princess said as she laughed at their antics.
I think we should bring him along.
Nyla May rolled a 6, and I rolled a 2, and Amrila cheered before she pulled the small pile of pebbles toward herself. Even without the coins, my wife was still very competitive by nature.
Excuse me,
a soft voice said from behind me. I turned and saw Bolra, the strangely alluring orc mystic. The firelight glowed off of her pale green skin, and she looked a little embarrassed as she held a small bag in her hands. Oh, hey, I said with a friendly smile, but then I looked around to see if her big-ass brother was anywhere nearby.
I'm bored to tears, and I was wondering if any of you wanted your fortunes read,
the beautiful woman asked in a shy voice. I'm fresh out of pebbles, Bakoth laughed, so I think that's a brilliant idea. Bulra smiled and sat on the ground next to the fire, and she carefully arranged her skirts to keep them from the flames.
Do you have a question for the bones?
The beautiful orc asked as she held the open bag toward Bakoth.
Will I have another son?
The red-haired warrior asked into the open bag. Bora closed the bag, shook it, and then poured some of the contents onto the ground. The bag was filled with the bones of small animals, and several wooden tokens with symbols drawn on them. And the raven-haired woman took a moment to see how the bones had arranged themselves before she looked back at Bakoth.
You will have 4 sons,
the green-skinned woman replied.
But there will be 3 daughters first.
That's 7 in total, the general said with a broad grin. A modest family, but not too bad. Does that include the son I already have?
They do not say,
Bulra answered as she looked back down at the bones.
Damn!
Bakoth suddenly gasped as he slapped his forehead.
I should have asked if I'd ever be rid of that ox.
The ladies and I erupted into laughter as the general cursed.
Would anyone else like to know their fortune?
The green-dyed woman asked. Sure, I said as I leaned forward. Why not? I'd been a skeptic before I'd found the gloom, but since then, I'd seen monsters and magic I would have never believed existed if I hadn't seen it myself. Maybe fortune-tellers were real, too.
What is your question?
Bulra asked as she put the bones back in the bag and held it up to me. Do I have to ask a specific question?
No.
The orc woman shook her head.
You can leave it up to the bones. Sometimes they just say what they want, no matter what you ask.
Okay. I smiled. What do the bones have to say, then? The young woman shook the bag again and poured the bones on the ground once more.
The bones see a great victory ahead of you,
Bulra said as she closely examined the arrangement.
You will fight many foes, but your greatest foe will be one you do not expect. And... No.
The orc woman stopped and looked up at me with wide eyes. What? I asked. What did you see?
You will lose a loved one soon,
Bulra murmured.
I am very sorry.
Shit. I blinked and I was taken aback by how serious the raven-haired woman sounded. Does it say who?
They do not,
Bulra sighed.
Just that it will be outside your control.
I opened my mouth to ask more questions, but I didn't get the chance.
Bulra!
A harsh voice shouted. I looked over and saw Zuag as he loomed in the distance with his arms crossed.
Come!
The orc captain called.
It's time for dinner!
If you'll excuse me,
the pretty orc said, and she gathered up her bones again. Then Bulra ran back over to her brother, and Zuag put his arm around her as he shot one last look in our direction.
Well,
Bakoth said as he watched them go,
that was ominous. Still, fortune-tellers aren't always right. Who wants some stew?
Bulra's words lingered in the back of my mind. But Bakoth was right. I had no proof fortune-tellers were real. I'd seen some crazy things in the gloom, but I'd seen them with my own eyes. Maybe talking to bones was just a fun cultural pastime. At least, that was what I told myself as I tried to push the pretty orc from my thoughts. The 4 of us ate some of the general's savory gloom hog stew, and it was even better than the beetle stew he'd made last time. Then, Amriel and I went to take our watch as Bakoth and Nilamay went to get some rest. The watch was uneventful, and I was able to get some sleep with my wife before we broke camp and moved out the next day. I still wasn't quite sure how people in the gloom told time, but everything seemed to move in a consistent rhythm, even without the sun. As we entered Tor's Bane, I caught a glimpse of Bulra as she walked back to the barracks, and the orc shaman looked over her shoulder like she could feel my gaze and met my eyes. The beautiful woman smiled and waved, but then her brother was suddenly at her side. Zuag's glower kept me from trying to say goodbye to the fortune teller, so I just waved back to be polite and stuck close to my friends. But I hoped I would see Bulra again. We left the guards in Tor's Bane and went back into the twilight. And it had only been a few days, so the swamp was still quiet, except for the birds and the wildlife that had already started to move back into the basilisk's old territory. The four petrified soldiers were still there, and unharmed besides the whole being stone bit, but hopefully the Karardu chief would have the antidote soon. Eventually, we made it back to the Dolrath's territory, and Amriel and I took some time to say goodbye to Bakoth and Nilamay. "We'll be back soon to deal with Igurk," I said to them as we stood outside of the encampment. "I think we'll try to track down Skrello before we come back here. Maybe we'll swing by Bermshire before we head home and give him a heads up."
"If we can't find him, we can always leave a message with Grok,"
Amriel shrugged.
"Then he'll know we're looking for him."
As we said our last goodbyes to the Dolrath warriors, I noticed how Nilame's eyes lingered on me, and she blushed a little when I hugged her one last time. "You could come with us," I said quietly to the princess.
"Really?"
Nilame asked, and she looked a little startled when she pulled back. "Yes, really," I grinned. "We'll be back in a day or so anyway, and I want to show you where I call home." I knew this was a big deal. Nilamay still didn't know I lived on the surface, but I'd meant what I said. I wanted to show her my home. I wanted to show her what life was like outside these caves. And I really wanted to see what her blue eyes looked like when they reflected the stars overhead.
I would like that,"
Nilamay finally murmured, and she blushed before she turned to the general beside her.
"Bakoth, could you make some excuses for me? Say that I went to help Eddie with his preparations."
"Of course," the Mohawk general replied with a sly smile. "It's my sworn duty to serve you, my lady."
"Thank you."
The dark-haired woman shot her friend a smile in return. Then the ladies and I found our way back up through the tunnels into the Eni territory. It took a couple of hours for us to get to Bermshire, but I was happy to see it was just as I remembered. I'd half expected it to be overrun with Erzinger's soldiers after our raid on his retreat, since half the town were members of the resistance, but all we saw were the town guards. We went to Grok's tavern where Scourge frequently drank. Even if he wasn't there, the orc tavern owner always seemed to know where to find him. The problem was that Grok still held a grudge from the time some of Erzinger's men had tossed his place after I'd fought the soldiers in the streets of Bermshire, so he'd probably be grumpy. But he hadn't caused any real issues about it yet. As we walked through town, I kept the hood of my cloak up, but the fact that I was taller than even most orcs made it hard for me to blend in. Eventually, the women and I entered Grok's place and saw it was full of patrons, mostly gnome and dwarf farmers, with a few night elves mixed in. I didn't bother to find a seat at any of the full tables and just went up to the bar, where Grok poured dark, amber-colored liquor into glasses with a practiced precision and speed. Amriel and I waited for him to notice us, and when he finally looked our way, the big tusked man scowled.
"What do you want?"
he rumbled.
"Do you know where Skrello is?"
the horned woman asked as she used the thief's alias.
"I think he's holed up somewhere."
The orc put an emphasis on the word hole.
"I guess we'll have to keep looking then,"
Amrila said as she nodded, and then she turned to me.
"Let's go."
"Why don't we just leave a message with Grok?" I asked in a quiet tone as Nilamay and I followed my wife out of the tavern. "That way we don't have to search all over the gloom for him."
"Grok already told me where he is,"
Amriel whispered back.
"Did he?"
the princess asked with a raised eyebrow.
"Yeah, he's in his hole,"
the red-skinned woman replied. "Okay," I snorted. I had no idea what that meant, but I trusted my wife. Amriel led us out of Bermshire, and we headed toward the gloom growth. The forest of giant gloom mushrooms was quiet and still, but there was still something in the air that just didn't feel right to me. As we walked through the 6-foot-tall stalks, I got an eerie feeling we were being watched. "Put on your headphones," I whispered to Amriel and Nilamay. "Something doesn't feel right." The ladies did as I asked, and kept their hands close to their weapons. We had only gone a few steps further when there was a loud screech, and an Ictor jumped out from behind a giant mushroom. The beast's wings flexed as it shrieked again, and shouts rose up from the growth around us. I quickly clicked on my flashlight and pointed the light on my rifle in the bat-like creature's beady eyes. Then I shouldered the Galil, trained the bead of the laser on the Nictor's chest, and squeezed the trigger. The Nictor was blown backward as a red hole burst through the beast's chest, so I quickly looked around and saw we were surrounded by a small group of Yeni soldiers and their pet Nictors. A quick count told me there were about a dozen of them in all.
"There he is!"
one soldier shouted.
"Move in! Take away his advantage!"
Fuck. The women and I put our backs together as the soldiers and Nictors tried to rush us, and then Nylame and I fired our rifles. I wanted to break the bastard's line and move to a better position so he wouldn't get caught in the meat grinder. The dark-haired elf and I fired several times, and we opened a hole in the line of Nictors and Yeni while Amrila watched our backs. As three soldiers and a Nictor fell, I ran forward.
"Run!"
I shouted to the women, and the three of us broke through the line as we dodged around the mushroom stalks. As I ran to get far ahead and shoot back at the Yeni, an arrow whizzed past my head. Jesus Christ! Of course they brought archers this time! I'd only made it a couple of yards, but I turned and fired at the first fucker with a bow I saw. And since the women were behind me now, I clicked on my flashlight as I aimed my laser at the archer's chest. A moment later, the man flew back with a fresh red hole in his chest, and the other Yeni shouted as they were blinded by my light. Then I fired another shot right through the head of one of the last two Nictors, and I watched as the beast's neck snapped back before he fell too.
"Leave some for me!"
my fierce Inkari wife complained. Suddenly, the last Nictor flew up into the air, but it was so disoriented from the light and the sound of the rifle fire that the poor bastard flew right up into one of the giant mushroom caps and crashed back to the ground in a heap. Then one of the soldiers broke and ran as his courage failed him.
"That one's mine!"
Amrila shouted as she ran after him. Nylame came and stood next to me, but she had to squint against the light, so I clicked off the flashlight for her. The damage was already done, though, and her first two shots went wide and blew pulpy chunks out of the mushroom stalks. Then the dark-haired woman shot at the Nictor on the ground, who had started to rise. The beast's back arched as the bullet ripped through his skull, and the creature's brains exploded out the other side. Then I heard a male scream and assumed Amrila had caught up to the soldier who'd been running away. A Yeni tried to shoot another arrow at me, but he missed by a mile after I'd half-blinded him, so the princess and I relentlessly fired at the last four soldiers until they all fell one by one. Once the last soldier hit the ground, I waited for a moment to make sure there weren't any more movements. "This was an ambush," I growled as I looked around at the bodies on the cave floor. "How the fuck did they know we were here?"
"Someone in Bermsha must have tipped them off,"
Amrila replied as she came back up and cleaned the blood off her sword with one of the dead soldier's cloaks.
"If Ursinger has heard that you've been seen in the town before, he might have paid off a villager to watch for you,"
Nylame added. "Well, that's good to know," I snorted with heavy sarcasm. "At least they didn't manage to get the drop on us, dumb fucks. Let's find Skrello and get out of here, in case there are any other soldiers in the area." It looked like we would have to avoid Bermshire until I took care of Ursinger once and for all. The women and I quickly made our way to the thieves' tunnels, and we kept an eye out for signs of any more soldiers. We didn't waste any time in the tunnels either. Amrila knew the thieves' tunnels like the back of her hand, and she guided the priestess and I to a small cave where the Zinkari man liked to hide.
Skrello?
I called as we got close, because the last time we'd snuck up on the dark-skinned man, he'd almost shot us with an arrow. I also fumbled over his name a little, but it was a little hard to keep the eccentric man's alliances straight.
Eddie?
I heard Scourge's voice echo out from his cave. Then the Zinkari man poked his head out, and I could see he held a bow in his hands.
"To what do I owe the pleasure?"
Scourge asked with a broad grin when he saw the three of us. The ladies and I entered his small, comfortable dwelling in the cave. A teapot steamed on a little fire in the center of the chamber, and the man with the gold-tipped horns invited us to sit on the plump pillows arranged on the floor. "We've a job, and thought you might like to help us with it," I replied as I sat down and watched the slinky man fuss with some clay pots that were set on a natural rock shelf.
"Does it pay well?"
the Zinkari man asked as he started to make some tea for the three of us.
"I imagine there will be some good plunder,"
Amrila said in a cheery voice.
"So, it doesn't pay."
Scourge frowned as he handed each of us a cup. "Not exactly." I chuckled and took a small cup of steaming tea. "But I think it will still interest you. The Karardu needs some help with a bandit named Igurk.
but once we take care of him, the Karardu will help us with Ursinger. Scourge grimaced.
So we're going to risk our lives fighting bandits to help a tribe of night elves? No offense, Nylame.
None taken.
The princess said in a mild tone as she sipped some of the herbal tea. But it's all a part of the fight against Ursinger. I added, will you help us?
I suppose I should.
The Zinkari man sighed dramatically.
You helped me with a bandit, so I guess I'll return the favor.
Perfect! I grinned. Can you meet us at the encampment in a couple of days? Things seem to be getting a little hot around here. We ran into some soldiers while we were trying to find you.
I've noticed an uptick in patrols myself.
Scourge nodded.
All right. I'll meet you in the Dolrath lands in 2 days.
Awesome, I said, before a thought occurred to me. Oh, actually, since we'll be working closely with the Dolrath now, would you mind dropping the Skrello the Valet alias and just going by Scourge? I don't want to keep fumbling over which one to use, especially in a life-or-death situation. I know you said the name Scourge comes with a certain reputation, but we've already thrown our lot in with the Dolrath, and they seem to trust us, so I don't think the princess will have you arrested.
I have it on pretty good authority that you'll be fine.
Nylame smirked.
Oh, but Skrello was fun.
The Zinkari man pouted before he shrugged.
But it's no matter. Scourge, Skrello, it's all the same to me. They're all just different hats to wear.
A sudden vision of Scourge trying on a montage of ridiculous hats flashed across my mind's eye, and I stifled a snort. Well, thanks, I said as I slapped my knees. Glad that's settled. We'll be on our way now. See you in a few days. With that, we thanked the dark-skinned man for the tea and left through the thieves' tunnels.
Should we go back through the Dolrath territory?
Amrila asked when we hit a cross-section in the tunnels.
Avoid any more run-ins with the Yeni?
No, that would add almost a day's travel for us, I replied as I shook my head. I think it would be better to take these tunnels as close as we can to the Great Forest and get home quicker. That way we can have a day or more to rest and get some supplies before we have to meet up with Scourge and Bakoth again.
There will be more cover in a forest than the mushroom growth,
the princess said. And I've some little friends there who can warn us about any patrols in the area. I grinned.
Little friends?
Nylame asked and cocked her head.
Eddie has befriended the wild brownies that live in the forest.
Amrila snickered.
Why am I not surprised?
The dark-haired woman smiled warmly at me. Let's get going, I said as I suppressed a blush. Ibsith will be waiting for us.
So, I finally get to see your mysterious home,
Nylame said with a note of intrigue.
Just you wait.
Amrila smirked as she moved toward the passageway that led to the forest.
Eddie would never admit it, but he's as rich as a king. You're never going to want to leave.
Amrila. I sighed, but my wife just cackled before she continued down the tunnel. And I didn't miss the contemplative look Nylame shot me over her shoulder either. Right now, though, I needed to focus on getting us through the gloom safely. We got through the thieves' tunnel and carefully worked our way through the forest. But we didn't come across any more patrols. I heard a Nyctor in the distance once, but that was all. So after we left the forest, the three of us made our way up to the plateau and into the final tunnel where the Northern Iron Door stood hidden. The door was camouflaged to look just like the rock of the tunnel walls, and I looked over at Nylame with a sly grin before I found the notch the key I had found fit into. Once I turned the key, the massive door swung open on its own, and the Dolrath princess gasped.
This can't be what I think it is,
the dark-haired night elf said with a note of wonder in her voice.
Are you sure?
Amrila asked with a mischievous grin, and then she stepped through the door.
Eddie.
Nylame breathed as she turned her wide blue eyes on me.
Is this the way to the world above?
Yes, I nodded, but it's probably way different than what you've heard. It's not a world full of monsters. This does have to remain a secret, though, but I think I can trust you. The warrior woman stepped closer to me, and even though she was tall for a night elf, I was still a full head taller than her.
You're a human.
Nylame purred as her blue eyes stared up at me. I am, I confirmed, and I'd like to show you my world. The princess was almost close enough to kiss, and I felt a strong compulsion to lean down and do so right then. But the door started to close, and we had to hurry through it, and on the other side of the iron door there was no glow from the gloom mushrooms, so I had to take the lead and turn on my headlamp.
Oh, by the gods!
The dark-haired woman swore as the bright light came on, and she covered her eyes.
You'll get used to it,
Amrila said with a note of sympathy.
Here, take these.
The red-skinned woman handed her fancy rhinestone sunglasses to the elven woman who put them on.
How clever.
Nyla May giggled as she looked around through the dark lenses. It might be even brighter when we reach the surface, I warned Nyla May, so you should be prepared for that. Amrila and I led the princess through the surface tunnels, and she had to cover her face with her cloak when we reached the place where I'd installed the floodlights. Amrila couldn't see in the bright lights without her sunglasses either, so the two women held hands, and I had to lead them through the brightest parts. Even I struggled through the lights after I'd spent so many days in the gloom, but we finally reached the ladder that led up to my backyard. It was early afternoon when we came out into the daylight, and Amrila and I helped Nyla May through the lilac bushes. And then she gasped as she saw the sky for the first time.
Oh, it goes on forever.
The dark-haired woman breathed as she stared up at the wide blue expanse dotted with clouds. We've got to be kind of quiet back here, I whispered. The neighbors are sort of nosy. Let's get into the trailer so you can meet Ibsith. Nyla May was still gaping up at the clouds, but she followed me across the yard. And as I came up to the back door, I could hear the sound of the vacuum and country music blaring at full blast. Then I opened the door, stepped into the small kitchen area, and saw my first wife as she danced and pushed the vacuum around the living room. Ibsith wore a cozy, slightly oversized knit sweater over a pair of tiny shorts. And her tiny, bare feet moved lightly over the carpet as she sang along with a Dolly Parton song. Baby! I shouted over the noises and hoped I didn't startle her. But my lovely wife squealed and jumped at the sound of my voice before she turned and saw me.
Eddie! You are home, my king!
She clicked off the vacuum with a nimble toe and then ran into my arms. I caught the white-haired woman in my arms, and I lifted her off the ground as I planted a kiss on her soft, wet lips. Amrila and Nyla May came in behind me a moment later, and the horned woman closed the back door. Then Ibsith saw the tall elven woman over my shoulder and dropped back to the floor.
You must be Nyla May!
My wife gasped before she threw her arms around the stoic warrior.
Princess Ibsith.
The taller woman replied as she awkwardly hugged her back.
I haven't seen you since we were children.
That idea made my mind reel. I knew Ibsith was over 100 years old, so that meant Nyla May was of a similar age. I had no idea when the Night Elves reached maturity, but how long ago would they have been kids?
Oh, no.
Ibsith shook her head and smiled as she pulled away.
I am not a Yenny princess anymore. I am content to be a wife and mother. I am only a queen in my husband's kingdom here on the surface. So, Eddie really is a king among the humans?
Nyla May asked with a confused expression. Not really. I snorted as I put down my backpack and started to pull at the shoulder straps of my breastplate. That's just how Ibsith sees me. We don't have kings around here.
We should have a feast to welcome our honored guest,
my elven wife said with enthusiasm as she clapped her hands together.
I will get everything ready as the three of you rest and shower. Oh, Princess Nyla May, you will love the shower.
The ladies led the dark-haired woman around the house and showed her their favorite things. Ibsith showed off the radio and all the conveniences of her kitchen. Amrila, on the other hand, proudly showed the Dolrath woman her bedroom.
This is all mine,
the horned woman said in a proud voice.
But since you are a guest, you may sleep here tonight.
My Zinkari wife smiled at me, and she was clearly pleased with herself for this act of generosity, so I winked back at her.
And this is the bathroom,
Ibsith added breathlessly as she opened the door a little further down the hall.
The chamber pot fills with water to carry your waste away so no one has to empty it.
Truly,
Nyla May asked with a tone of wonder.
What a strange and marvelous contraption.
Yes, observe.
Ibsith stepped in and flushed the toilet to show the tall woman how it worked.
Look at how it swirls around like a whirlpool.
The Dolrath princess giggled.
I think you should get the first shower since you are our guest.
The white-haired woman replied.
I will get some fresh clothes for you. To work it, you have to turn these knobs until the water is as warm as you desire. And these soaps are for your hair, while this one is for your body. Oh, and if you put this one in your hair after you wash it, it will make your locks as smooth as any silk.
I must confess I'm a little overwhelmed,
Nyla May replied as she bit her lip.
I've never seen this kind of luxury before.
Living here is like a dream.
Ibsith purred like a content kitten.
But truly, I would sooner live in a hovel with Eddie than in the gloom as a princess.
All right, ladies, I interjected as I started to blush a little.
We should let Nylame get cleaned up. She had an awful lot thrown at her at once.
Oh, yes, I apologize. Let me get you some clean garments,
Ibsith said with a sheepish smile. While Ibsith got some clothes for the dark-haired woman, Amrila showed her again which knobs were for hot or cold water, and I smiled at the excitement gleaming in Nylame's blue eyes. I knew bringing her up here had been the right call. About 20 minutes later, the Dolrath woman came out of the bathroom with damp hair. She was dressed in one of Ibsith's new cropped sweaters and a pair of tight leggings with a floral print, and when Nylame moved, I could see her firm 6-pack abs.
That was glorious.
The warrior woman sighed, and her face glowed with contentment. I'm glad you enjoyed it, I grinned. Then Amriel and I both took a quick shower to wash the grime off, and by the time we were all cleaned up, Ibsith had some chicken breasts marinating as she cut up some vegetables. Nylame stood next to my elven wife with a beer in her hand as they talked quietly, but I couldn't hear exactly what they were discussing. I'll go out and get the grill started, I said as I grabbed a beer from the fridge.
Thank you, my king.
Ibsith smiled at me and then caught the Dolrath woman's eye, and the two started to giggle. I wondered what they'd been talking about, but chose not to ask. Instead, I went out the back door before either of them could see me start to blush. I knew Ibsith had probably been talking me up to Nylame, since she was all about the idea of expanding our family. The elven woman wanted me to have as many wives as possible, and I'd started to warm up to that idea. As I got the grill and charcoal out, I wondered how many wives I could reasonably have. Money wasn't an issue anymore, but if I married a woman, I wanted to be sure I could make her happy. Any girl I dated in college wanted my undivided attention, which could be exhausting. But Ibsith and Amrila had their own interests, and they never vied for my attention. Honestly, I thought Nylame would be a great wife. The Dolrath woman shared my love of guns, and I found her quiet ways very appealing. Once the grill was ready, the four of us gathered outside as I cooked up the chicken and steaks. Ibsith had made a beautiful salad to go with the meat, and we ate and talked the afternoon away. Then, as night started to fall, we drank beer and laughed together. I think tomorrow we can all pile into the jeep and show Nylame around, I said as my elven wife cuddled up next to me. Maybe do some shopping. We haven't picked out furniture for the new house.
Can we stop at Nathan's shop?
Amrila asked as she sipped her beer.
I think Nylame would like to see all the guns he has.
I would indeed.
The dark-haired woman agreed with a broad grin. Of course, I smiled. We'll get a good night's sleep and spend the day out tomorrow. The ladies all nodded in agreement, but the silence was broken by Nylame's loud yawn.
I apologize,
she said as her cheeks darkened with a blush.
Eating such a grand meal after traveling has taxed me.
You don't have to apologize, I assured her. I'm just happy you enjoyed dinner.
I very much did,
Nylame said with a smile before she turned to the other blue-skinned woman at my side.
Thank you, Ibsith. Everything was delicious.
I agree.
My wife smiled and laid her head on my shoulder.
Eddie always cooks the meat to perfection.
It seems there isn't much he can't do.
Nylame murmured as her blue eyes locked with mine. But the tense moment was broken as her jaw cracked with another yawn.
Come,
Amrila said to the Dolrath princess.
I'll get you set up in my room.
Nylame followed the red-skinned woman back into the house, and I sat with Ibsith as we looked up at the stars. How's your greenhouse coming along? I asked as I wrapped my arms around my first wife.
Some of the cucumbers are almost ready,
Ibsith replied as she snuggled closer to me.
Mrs. Tynor is going to show me how to can and pickle them.
Hell yeah, I grinned. I love homemade pickles.
And I love you.
Ibsith smiled up at me. Then she moved to straddle my lap as we began to kiss.